Oh, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Conscious Thought with Leo on BBS Radio Talk Show, and I'm your host, Magdalena Winkler. Well, thank you so much for tuning in for tonight, and I will have an incredible guest tonight again. And before we just start, I just wanted to let you know, if you're listening and you wanted to interact with the show, the telephone number is 1-888-627-6088. Again, the call-in number to interact will be 1-888-627-6008. Well, okay, let's welcome our guest for tonight. His name is Meir Schneider, and he's from Self Healing. Well, welcome and good evening.
Hi, nice
Well,
to
thank
talk
you.
to you. It's afternoon
Same
here.
here. Same here. Listen, welcome to the show, and I'm so excited that we can talk about this incredible topic that, the whole world, I have to say, that can resonate with it. And it will be about the human vision. And as I was preparing actually for tonight's show, I have to say to you, I was shocked when I was, researching a little on the Google and try to find out, they are talking about, for instance, that according to the Vision Impact Institute research, that three or four people, they are wearing, they are actually having a vision correction, and 71% of the people are wearing glasses, and 20%, 22% of those wear also contact lenses. And they're saying that 4 billion adults in the world wear glasses, and 50% of them are women, and 42% are men. I mean, this is astounding number. So I'm so glad, Mayor, that you are here so you can help us to enlighten us a little what is really about and what can we actually do. And this is why I love that you are coming actually from self-healing. So.
You know, the only thing I'm sorry about, Magdalena, is that you're not CNN and that you're not one of those big shows that everybody should listen to. But I think that humanity is standing in front of a very, very difficult situation. First of all, glasses are not harmless. Everybody thinks they are, but they're not. When you wear glasses, you look through a focal point that the glasses give you. That means you don't move your eyes as much, you move your head to look at things. There is tremendous amount of tension that happens in the eyes and in the neck, and you don't get the full picture in the whole retina. You get it in part of the retina that relates to the focal point of the glasses. And that eventually leads to a frozen stare, and most people who wear glasses have, for a while at least, to change their prescription to a larger one. Contacts are better than glasses in that way. But the problem with contacts, they don't allow the cornea to breathe, and the immune system should reject every foreign object. And what happens is, when the immune system adjusts to the contact lenses, eventually what's going on is that it becomes weaker, and then any dust particle can be a problem for the cornea. LASIK is the worst thing in the world. I remember that once I had a nice show at 208 in Jerusalem with a holistic ophthalmologist, and she told me, "Mayor, you know, in Israel there are 200 LASIK specialists. 120 of them wear glasses. None of them had the surgery done on them. And if that doesn't tell you something, what does?" Well, you can have
That is
a loss of
insane.
vision. Yeah, you could have a loss of vision. You can have a loss of night vision, you can have astigmatism. And anyway, it's a prescription that only lasts for a while. They make glasses out of your cornea. So what's going on is that ophthalmology simply fixes people's symptoms. So if you don't see well, they prescribe for you glasses, and then what happens is your eyeball becomes longer and longer and longer with time, and some people have high myopia, and with time they can have retinal detachment. And it can lead to major problems with one's vision. But also look at the kind of lifestyle that we live these days. People looking at iPhones. I've seen one lady in a subway that I took from Brooklyn, sorry, from Manhattan to Brooklyn. she didn't pay attention to the 150 people who came and left throughout the whole trip, the train, she only paid attention to her nice movie she was looking at. So just imagine you take the same lady to the jungle, and all she does is look at her phone or at her laptop and doesn't pay attention to her periphery, she would be eaten. So the point is, for a million years, humanity paid attention to the periphery. People looked at the distance and not so much from near. People adjusted to the sun instead of escaping the sun. People were able to also see at night, something that people these days don't do because they turn lights on and flashlights on. They were able to do so many things and they look at so many details, and that's why they had good vision. And if you go to New Zealand, you cannot even find among the Maoris one nearsighted person. You go to the Indians in the Amazon, or the natives of the Amazon, and you find that basically less than 1% of them are nearsighted. Go to Taiwan, and 84% of them are nearsighted. Go to Hong Kong, and 80% of them are nearsighted. And the difference is whomever learns to use the computer from an early age. It's not genetic. Some of it is genetic. I was born with the genetic problems. My kids were born with my genetic problems. But those things are not genetics. What it is how we use the eyes. And eye exercises can make a very big difference. But even before eye exercises, I remember that there was an article about a lady who brought her 15-year teenager to an ophthalmologist and told the ophthalmologist it's time to have glasses for my daughter. And the ophthalmologist said, no, after every half an hour that your daughter uses the computer, she should go out and play. And guess what? Glasses were not needed. And I have more and more stories of that nature with me and with many other people. But truth of the matter is we all expect people to wear glasses. When one of the people who heard about my work and was 72 years of age went to her ophthalmologist in Jerusalem, and she was able to read the smallest of letters, he said, no, you're 72, you have to wear glasses. But she said, but I see everything without them. He was not happy. He was angry because it didn't fit his dogma about what happened. So let's get rid of the dogma. Let's understand that glasses are basically tools. They are like crutches. Crutches are so good for my patients who are in a wheelchair or who do not move. But if you start to have crutches before time, you're going to weaken your legs. If you're going to have wheelchair before time, you're going to weaken your whole body. And don't sit in the wheelchair of the eyes. Don't put your glasses on before you try alternatives to glasses like eye exercises. And if you wear them, start to find a way to do without them. And that's going to make a difference. So I'm saying again, Magdalena, the only thing I'm unhappy is how small your show is, because if it was big, probably my words would have created a whole revolution.
Listen, you never know who will listen to that, so you never know, okay? But listen, when I saw your bio, okay, when I went through, you know, who will be my next guest, and when I saw, you know, your information, I said, I have to have you because this topic is so needed.
Absolutely.
And you know, as I am listening to you, I can already see this is just, you know, it's related to lifestyle. And another thing is what I'm seeing in my own personal way when I'm dealing in the healings, that we are put in this brackets of 20 years. From the birth until 20, you have to behave this way. From 20 to 40, you have to behave this way. From 40 to 60, blah, blah, blah. And from 60 to 80, you have to get retired and prepare. You have to die. I mean, this is just amazing, the programming.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think that when the nurse sends you, when the teacher sends you to the nurse to measure your eyes and you see one or two lines less than the 20/20 line, that's not the time to go and wear glasses. That's the time to do eye exercise, so you never need them. And it is so important to work on all of our lifestyle and to be aware of what we do that causes eyes to get worse, and work on getting them better. And we can definitely show people how to do it.
Absolutely. And you know what? I would really actually like if you don't mind to share your story, because your story is so remarkable. And that will that can actually give people a tremendous, power to make a step to do something, for to improvement for their own vision.
Yes, I was born with cataracts. It's very, very unusual because so many people have cataracts. As you said, the program that doctors have, the people have, that after 60 you may have cataract. Well, so many people have it, which is opacity of the lens. But only 1 out of 20,000 infants are ever born with cataracts. And I had 5 unsuccessful surgeries, and the result was that 99% of my lens is scar tissue. 99%.
Wow.
And only 1% of my lens allows the light to go through. Anyone who wants to look at our website could easily see that. But we can show real pictures in lectures. So what happens is that I used to read Braille, and I used to have 1% vision. And people scolded my grandmother and my parents, who, by the way, were deaf. I was born blind to deaf parents. And people scolded them all for allowing me to walk in the street without a cane or seeing eye dog. And I did have some accidents just walking and bumping into things. I found myself again in the emergency, and some drivers being very distressed of what's going on. When they stop on the sidewalk and then I bumped against them. I used to bump against walls and poles and name it. But I persisted, and at the age of 16 and, and a half, or 16 and three quarters, I met a kid who read the base books in Hebrew, and he had shown me eye exercises, and I developed them much further. And the biggest breakthrough I had when I improved my vision from 1% to 5. And then, do you hear me, Magdalena?
Yes, I don't know what's going on. Okay.
Okay. When I improved my vision from 1% to 5%, but then the next breakthrough, which was for me like getting a Nobel Prize, was at the age of 28. So I started the process when I was a little bit under 17. And at the age of 28, I got my driver's license. It was like winning a prize, and I still have it. I'm 60, going on 61. Let's see if they're going to renew it automatically, or I have to go and be examined again. But I have an unrestricted driver's license. And because my vision is only 70% of normal, they basically try me on the freeway and on city roads. And they try me in the daytime and at night. And I was able to pass all the tests and have an unrestricted driver's license and drive my kids and drive everyone. I feel so good about that.
But well, listen, when you were sharing this with me, I was so astounded. That it's amazing that you can drive on the interstate.
Yeah, I definitely can. Definitely can.
Wow.
I'm very happy about that. On every Sunday, I'm driving to a patient of mine who's in a wheelchair. And every now and then, I drive 75 miles out of the road. You wouldn't see me driving from San Francisco to New York, let's say, but you would see me driving within the state as many as 150 or 200 miles, no problem. And I've achieved that with diligence. I've achieved that with doing eye exercise, and the principles of eye exercises is deep relaxation of the eyes, adjustment to different light frequencies, learning to look at details, learning to look at a distance, learning to pay attention to the periphery, and learning to work with your weaker eye, and creating eye and body coordination and cooperation. I've done all of that, and I'm doing it still, and my vision is slowly but truly getting better all the time.
Wow. Well, you know what I really liked that you're saying here that, for instance, that you're saying that this is not simple a miracle, but it can be applicable to everyone. That's exactly. An incredible statement.
That is a very important statement, because what does it matter to you that I improved my vision? What matters to you is that you can get rid of your glasses, that you can see without them with time, that your eyes can get stronger, and in that sense that the rest of the body can get stronger.
Yeah, you know, and you know, we know, I mean, you know, I am myself in the health and wellness and in the healing. And, you know, what is fascinating to me is that when, as you are talking about, when you are, you know, constantly concentrating, doing the exercises, that part of ourself that if we are not exercising or not using, they start to actually go into deterioration. And there's obviously
Absolutely.
The same,
Every
there's the
part,
same thing happening
vision.
With the eyes.
Exactly, if you put glasses on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can give you a few ideas about that. For example, there was one lady that was diagnosed with poor vision because she went through a major divorce, and she saw everything through a veil. And she decided not to wear glasses, and within 3 months, her vision was perfect, and 30 years later, it was perfect. But I'll give you the opposite idea. My two kids were born with cataracts, and it was really hard. They went through the surgeries, and we put very strong contact lenses for them to see with. And one of the things that happened is that my daughter was used to a nice male optometrist. She really liked him and felt comfortable with him, and her vision was pretty good, 20/30, 20/40, which is 80 to 90% of normal vision with correction, since she didn't have her natural lens and they didn't put an implant. So then one time she comes, and she normally saw the optometrist first and her ophthalmologist second. And there was a new optometrist, a nervous lady who was very nice but very nervous. And with glasses, her vision was 50%, then 40% of normal vision, 20/80, 20/100. And I came in the middle, and my ex-wife told me, look, she's seeing much worse. And they gave her stronger and stronger prescription. So I put her on my shoulders, put an eye patch over her stronger eye. We were at the fifth floor, and I got her to look at buildings, to look at cars, to look at trees, and to use a weaker eye and to work with it. We normally worked it at home. We rolled balls to each other through half a yard, then a yard, then 3 yards. We made all kinds of games with that. So she knew how to do it. She looked at different things. Then we took the patch out, and then she went to a doctor appointment, and the vision without glasses was 20/60. About 65% of normal vision. And that was after seeing with glasses only 40 or 50% of normal vision. And it's the first time in her life, at the age of 10, that she was able to see the 20/20 line. And we reduced her prescription and reduced it quite a bit. And she's reading, writing, driving, going everywhere in the world. And what I want to say is that when you go to an optometrist and he or she measure your vision, you may be under stress, and when you're under stress, your vision is going to be a vision of somebody under stress, and you see worse. So then when you will get your glasses, they will be too strong for you. So now you get strong glasses, you adjust to those strong glasses, and the way you adjust to them is by seeing worse. And so the important thing that I want to tell you in that sense is that it's important for us to look at details without straining to look at details. It's very, very important for us to do that, and it's important for us not to be stressed when we're being measured.
And oh, that's so critical, enough. Yes.
Yeah.
That's very much critical, Smea. You know, I mean, as I'm listening to this story, and as I said to you that, you know, as I was Googling all this information, I find another information that, for instance, kids at the age between 6 to 18, they are having 80% visual issue. And it just looked like this is insane. But what I'm also trying to say here is that I would actually call parents, you know, to pay more attention what is really going on in children's life and actually support them and maybe try to show them different exercises. Don't you think that would be something, you know, that they could do?
Yeah,
when
my kids were growing, I used to go to the schools, and even now young adults do not forget the one or two lessons they got from me in the middle school, and they still do their exercises, like the palming, where they rub the hands and they put the hands around the eye orbits and they rest the eyes. So basically, I think the best time to work is exactly before an issue becomes a problem. And the worst time, of course, is when it's a big problem. But I think that you could see, even with the case of my kids, who were born with a miserable problem, but they were operated at the age of 2 weeks as infants, and the brain developed normally. My son without glasses sees 80% of normal vision and doesn't have his natural lens. He should not even see more than 5%. My daughter without natural lens, with small cornea and with an eye without a lens, it's called a phakic eye, she should see 2.5%. And she sees 20/20 with a correction, and my son with his correction sees another line smaller than 20/20. He sees the 20/15 line with correction. It's just unheard of. And the reason is they did eye exercises while doing the proper medical treatment. And we'll need less medical treatments if people will do this work. It's just like, you know, what do you prefer, a heart surgery or a run around your block every single day? Well, you run around the block and you sweat and your blood pumps well, you may never need a surgery. You know, it's so incredible how they succeed with the surgeries, but it's much more incredible not to need them. And the same thing is with glasses. It's best not to need them.
Well, you know, my show is always, you know, the reason why I'm calling it actually Conscious Thought with Leo is that, you know, I am actually really always looking for, you know, to become conscious what's really going on in our environment. And I like to be also information highable to the global community and bring information. What I'm trying to say with that is that we are not against doctors and ophthalmologists in whatever is really going on. But what I'm really actually for to give people choices to those people who are actually looking for solution.
I agree with you. And it's true about the eyes and it's true about the body.
Everything.
Because I think that what's missing for the body is work on kinesthetic awareness, on deep sense of the body. And the principles of our work with the body is that, first of all, we're looking for muscles we never knew existed. We have 600 muscles in the body, and most people use only 50 out of them. We work on creating better connection between our nervous system and muscles we never knew we had. And we're trying to increase our capacity to use those muscles. We are working in a way to loosen up the muscles we always overused so we can get rid of the tension that doesn't allow us to mobilize ourselves. That tension makes injury worse. We are double injured. We're injured and then we are even more injured by not using the muscles of the body properly. We have to learn to use muscles we never use, loosen up the muscles we always use, and create better connection between the body and the brain, create muscle isolation, and then with time, create better mobility all over the body. And that's basically what we do. So I'm going to teach a training course, which is both training to work on others, but first of all, training for your life, you know, training you to do what you need to do for yourself, on August 12th to 31st. We have people who come from all corners of the country and all over the world to study with me. And I'm also going all over the world to teach. I'm going to Brazil on July to teach advanced people my work, physiotherapists, occupational therapists, and also lay people. I would love to see someone or a couple of people coming from this show to our school and learning life knowledge of how to work with their body in the deepest possible way, to work on their senses, to work on their body, and to regenerate their body completely. And if we can achieve that, we can, first of all, change people's lives and then create a new practitioner that helps other people by connecting to the other people, that helps other people by creating basically a partnership with the client, giving knowledge to the client and being with the client and creating big changes. And anyone who wants to read my book, Movement for Self-Healing, can see how it worked. Like, you know, I had a patient with ALS who had no sensation in her hands and feet. She only knew that something is wrong when she lost her shoes and didn't feel that. And she was diagnosed with progressive multiple sclerosis. And I did not know what to do with that symptom. First of all, I worked with everything else in her body, but not with that symptom. And then one of my teacher, who you could see in the book Movement for Self-Healing, said, well, it's pretty simple. Have her knock with her fingers very quickly against the table. So I had a knock with the fingers, and we first both felt pain, and then we knocked with the knuckles, and we felt again pain, and we felt numbness, and then which was a sensation, and then we had regular sensation. She could feel the difference between pen and pencils, and then her legs were heavy, so we basically tapped with her heels and with her foot against the floor, and within 3 weeks she was able to feel everything under her feet. Now that kind
of moment, I was looking forward, you know, the time frame, how long it took you guys to get the sensation.
Isn't that something? One Friday we could do the hands, and in 3 weeks it could take us to get the feet. It was amazing. And what I want to say is that it was probably one of my best cases ever, because what basically happened is it basically boggled the mind of all doctors that I spoke with about that, because that should not happen. But it did happen. But I was one with my patient. I was really hurting over her not getting better in that way. We got her better in many other ways. And now I have a muscular dystrophy patient that, unfortunately, she starved herself to some extent by trying to cook for herself and not getting help. And she ended up being in a coma, and she ended up being worse, and her joints are very stiff. And now we're working intensively. We're loosening the joints, and at least we're starting to get her to walk for a few feet with support, and that's a good start. And so and it's amazing. Her sister has multiple sclerosis, and she was about to go to nursing home and living assistance, and she has such a beautiful house. And I'm able to get her with some hardness, sluggishness, I'm able to get her to climb upstairs and downstairs, and she's staying in her home. And that I'm able to do already for the last 5 years, so I'm very happy about that. So in every situation, you really want to examine the strength of your body. We had boxers in our classes, very nice people. We don't box with anyone out of the ring, you know, but boxers, we had, this guy was also drinking beer at the end of the boxing. You know, I told him not to drink beer at the end, but he liked doing it. But he drank beer with his competitor. There was always sports rather than hostility. But what's nice is that we had also weightlifters, personal trainers, people in great shapes. At the same time, we have injured people, people with muscular dystrophy, people with polio, and all benefited from the knowledge. And that is kinesthetic awareness and awareness of the incredible capacity that the body has. And so those people who really want to improve, we also do individual sessions, of course. But my class could be like a very big workshop where people, for a fee which is not a very big one, can work on themselves, work on others, improve themselves, improve others, and have an experience that can really really last for years and years and change your life completely. And that is by knowing the depth of the body, by having awareness to movement, to breathing, and better sensation of the body and better sensory awareness.
Well, this is actually very much the key, Mayor, about, you know, the kinesthetic awareness, because, you know, what is really happening, we are giving our awareness too much to the technology today. You know, people are giving to the, you know, either the iPad, the phone, or computers, TV, or whatever, you know what I'm saying. But with that, at the same time, we are losing also natural ability of our bodies and our senses.
There's more than that, but you're absolutely right. For example, people look at everything they do. So if you smell, let's say you smell your food, you're going to look at what you smelled. If you hear, you look at what you heard. If you feel, you look at what you felt. Now, I had a nice lady with muscular dystrophy who came to me because she wasn't able anymore to walk to the bathroom, even with help. And I was able to actually change that in her. Attendant says, milagre, a miracle. They came from Mexico to work with me. And it was like today, beautiful sunny day in the foggy area of San Francisco. In fact, I had several days like this, so she got sunburn, which was funny to get somebody from Mexico with that in San Francisco. But anyway, what happened is I was able to carry her up the stairs. I was able to carry her to the trampoline. Her attendant had to hold her head because she wasn't strong enough to hold her own head. But I got her to the sun, and I massaged her in the sun, and she loved it. She never doubted for 1 minute that I would skip a step. She never doubted for 1 minute I will not put her on a trampoline. She knew that I know exactly what I'm doing because, first of all, she trusts me. But the second thing, I feel with my feet. You don't see what's underneath you with your feet, but you feel with them. And so people, you know, I used to read Braille. People don't understand how important it is to spread our senses, to start and feel more. That's one of the things that you learn in my classes, by the way, sensory integration and to sense the body in as deep way as possible. I think it's such an important thing to do. And then the other thing is, to stop the dogmas of what's going to get worse. I mean, I remember I talked to one wonderful man who was having old people's program in Florida, actually, from where you are. And I told him, you know, we don't have to get cataracts. He said, everybody gets cataracts. The question is when. I said, well, you can get it after you die.
Oh, my God.
You know? And so I have a wonderful T-shirt that said, my karma ran over my dogma. And I think we should stop being dogmatic about what needs to get worse in our life and start to believe that we can actually become more flexible even if we're 80, and start to believe that we can actually have good memory even when we're 90, and start to believe that things can function better, and then they will. And what we need to do is start to work with movement to allow things to function better. That's what you and I and the rest of the world needs to do. And as Dennis said, Magdalena, the only problem we have is that the whole world is not listening to the show. I would love to be interviewed by you next time in a much, much bigger channel.
Well, you never know, okay? So, you know, we start somewhere. But listen, this is fascinating to me because, yes, this is exactly what I believe into that. What I'm calling this right now, that we are breaking actually the barrier of the mind limitations. And this is actually the biggest dogma that we actually have to cross.
Do you know that an ant normally carries a weight which is 6 times its own weight? And do you know why?
No.
Because no one tells the ant it can't do that.
Mm.
And we are so careful in what we do. I myself am careful for my clients. I make sure that things will not go wrong. But we really have to start and believe in our ability to move forward. We have to start and believe in our ability to do more than we're doing. And that's why I work with wheelchair patients. I was able to prevent more than 400 people from getting into the wheelchair. I was able to prevent people in the wheelchair from getting worse. I was able to slow down people getting worse. You know, we have patrons. We are a nonprofit foundation. Just today we got a nice check of $20,000 to help needy students who want to come to our program. Of somebody who unfortunately did not do my program right now, she's dying from ALS. But in the past, she was really, really a great, great therapist and supporter of my work. We have people who feel very strongly about the work that we're doing. I want the rest of the world to feel the same. The research has to be around the strength that humans have, not the weakness. It shouldn't be only of what gets worse, but also on what can get better.
Oh, that's actually a very good statement. I'm writing, taking notes, and that's that is pretty amazing statement. Actually, I have to, you know, say that you know, concentrate more on the strength, not on the weaknesses. And you know, in most cases, what we are doing, we are fixing too much on healing or correcting something instead to go into the opposite direction. I think that should be a turnaround here.
True healing is actually learning your strength. That when you have muscular dystrophy, like I have somebody who came to me now from Colombia, the country of Colombia, you know, to work on a muscular dystrophy. I have many patients with muscular dystrophy in Brazil. And
I would like you to talk more about your work in Brazil. Do you mind?
Sure. I'll be glad to. But just to finish that thought, you know, and this lady with muscular dystrophy, her name is Beatrice, became the main teacher of my work outside of the United States, and she's teaching in Brazil mainly. And she was an occupational therapist. She still is by license. But she basically is doing my work, and she's training other people to do my work. And her mother died from muscular dystrophy, and she improved 40%. She wasn't able to lift her arms up, and she was able when we finished. She wasn't able to chew a meal to the end because her muscles were too weak, and she was able to eat meals very well after that. She wasn't able to dance. Now she can dance and run. And we started with her being in her mid-20s, and now she's in her mid-50s. She's doing very well with that. And so one thing that I want to say is that muscular dystrophy can be overcome with this work. It's a big thing. So my work in Brazil is very big because I have, unlike in this country, many, many professional people who take my courses, from optometrists to ophthalmologists to physiatrists and also physiotherapists and occupational therapists and nurses and body workers and also lay people. One of my students has had multiple sclerosis and the diagnosis was reversed, and she was the head of a major school of nursing. And when I did a tour in Brazil, I was lecturing to 800 nurses because she was running the school and she was the main professor there. And one of a student of one of my teachers in Brazil is the head of physiotherapy in another state called Maringá. And so we really are getting to many people who are very professional in the work, and they find that something is missing in their profession. It's exactly what I'm talking about. Thinking about what makes the body strong and capable, and thinking about movement, not just about a product, although I believe in some products, but mainly that feel that movement is life, and that finding the inner movement of your body is the meditative way for you to find your strength. It's something that I'm telling to all my muscular dystrophy patients, including the one from Colombia. Yes, you have genes that can get you worse, but you have genes that can get you better. And those have not been explored. The ones that get you worse were explored thoroughly. And on that, people making billions of dollars. But the ones that can get you better are not being explored. And they are in your body, and they can be evoked with movement that you make. And that's a big thing. And that's why, you know, we're not in the mainstream media as of yet, because we need to bring that to the consciousness of the world. I need new research to show how oxygen, circulation, how awareness, how connection to the body makes a difference. Just now I had somebody who had a terrible neck injury because basically a machine got him to fall on his head and cracked many of his vertebrae. And in fact, they even prohibited me from touching his neck. But I did with him imagery, and he had headaches from imagery, which most people don't. I said, well, your brain is starting to work. But after the imagery, his mobility got better and his pain got less. So what I'm saying is that imagery is a connection, a way to connect between your brain and your body. And imagery has to be real. Like, I will never tell a wheelchair patient, imagine you're dancing. But I would get him to move, and I'll tell him, imagine you're moving, the movement that he has. Or imagine you're more comfortable a bit. Or just repeat imagining how your movement is, and then they get better. Or before I get my patient with multiple sclerosis to walk up the stairs, I tell her, close your eyes and think about yourself making the next two steps. And then when she does it well, then the next two steps. That's the only way to move forward, and this is to move forward step by step. And that's the work we're doing.
It's fascinating, you know. I mean, you know, just think about, you know, we are saying that we are using, you know, maybe how much, 90 or 85 or 90% of our brain. I mean, can you imagine, you know, the rest of the brain, you know, the capacity, what we can actually activate in possibility to help ourselves, you know, in every area to improve. And that is, it's just incredible. When you were talking about the genes,
you know,
I mean,
in our life, one thing is missing. Life. We're not as alive as we could be. And once we understand that, and once we understand that being alive is being happy, that basically connecting between your brain and your body, sensing your brain in a whole new way, that makes the whole difference in the world.
Do you feel that actually you have to deal with a lot of reprogramming when you're working with patients or with people?
Well, that's all we do. That's all we do, but not necessarily with talk, although talk is a part of it. Also with knowledge. I'll give you a real easy sense. You know, people don't even feel how much they neglect their hamstrings until I teach them to walk backwards. You walk backwards, all of a sudden, you're learning that actually your hamstrings are pretty weak, but after walking backwards, you learn that you have much better support to the upper body. People don't know how much the legs affect the neck, but the more you work with your feet and with your toes, the more the proprioceptors of your brain sense that the feet support the upper body, and then your neck becomes looser.
Mm-hmm.
So the most important thing in the world is to have a sense of support of the lower body to the upper body. That's basically the issue.
Wow, that's very interesting. Let me ask you a question. When you're just talking about, what is your opinion? I will not necessarily use the word opinion, but what is your intake when people are doing a workout or people are doing yoga? Or what did you find that is the best, exercise for the human body?
One thing that we should really understand is how much we need to use what we never used.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do workout, think about the muscles you didn't work, because you may go to 14, 15 different machines. What about the rest of your muscles? So you need to stretch the muscles that you worked, but you also need to use the machines. You also need the machines in a whole new way. When you do yoga, ask yourself, am I doing simply an apasana that somebody told me I should do? Am I really balanced? Am I balancing strength with stretch? Because you see, many people are so strong and building up so much strength and not enough flexibility that they can't even button their shirts. And many people do so much stretching that then they cannot do anything that demands strength. And you really need to learn the balance, but you also need to learn the balance of what you do versus what you don't, and then work on what you did not do in the class. So our work is detecting what the body needs. You do movement, because movement is life, and you learn what the body needs and what the body does not do. And that's why I'm saying in August we're going to have an intensive class. It's only 16 days, and it's, you know, with breaks in between each segment of those days.
Is this in San Francisco?
In San Francisco. And we're by the beach. We have a nice trampoline. We have a hot tub. We're in a residential area. We got a special permit by the Board of Supervisors to move here, which was wonderful. It makes me feel good about the city. And we have such a good setting for that. And so if people come, it's like coming for a working vacation on the body. You take a vacation from life and you start to be with your body and also with other people. You work to help yourself and to help others. And that's how people start this whole new profession, because I really believe you start this profession by thinking, first of all, about how to improve yourself and those who are around you. And when we are together in a class, we all care for each other and want to make sure that people get better.
Is this that I think the new kind of practitioner that you're looking for?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for a new practitioner, and I'm looking also for more and more people who want to help themselves move forward. I had people, for example, who had terrible accidents and took my classes, and they were much more functional when they finished those classes.
Maya, can you tell us where we can find all this information?
Yeah, you can first of all call us at 415-665-9574, and you can also look at www.self-healing.org. And I will definitely have the show in our website. We normally have as many as 600 audience to anything that we send. So we will put it on our website and put it as the message of the week.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you're talking about also that, you know, you're doing, you know, worldwide, you know, your classes. So
yeah. This year I'm going to Singapore, then to France, then to Portugal, then to Spain to lecture in a major natural vision improvement conference, then to Italy. And I may do another trip to Canada. And next year I'm definitely going to be in Israel for a couple of months to do a training course there. And I will definitely be all over the world. Now that my daughter is going and experimenting and going to Australia, I will reconnect with some Australian contacts that I have and come and teach in Australia.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Yeah. I'm actually going next week to Europe. Too bad you're not going to Germany.
I did. I went to Germany, and I have to go to Germany every year because one of the absolute best places I've ever been to was the Black Forest in Germany, a town called Kirzachen, which is not far from Freiburg. And it is a wonderful place. I used to also lecture in Berlin and in Frankfurt, but that organization I have very good connection with. Last time we had a class was about 70 people. And I love to walk in the Black Forest, and it was just fantastic to be there. I'm sorry,
I know.
Luggage is so expensive these days because I have to carry a lot with me.
Listen, tell me, how people are responding? You know, where do you feel the best response to your work? Do you feel here in United States or more outside, around the world?
Around the world, really. I mean, the best place, of course, is Brazil. Second to it is Israel. And then third to it is Germany. And people respond very well in England. But I have no complaints because many people respond here. This is like the Babylon Tower. People don't understand real work than others. I remember when Sounds True took my work and got me to produce Yoga for Your Eyes, the Miracle Eyesight Method, and a Natural Vision Improvement Kit. The one thing that the owner of Sounds True told me, Mayor, the reason I'm getting you to do all this is because your work is for real. And that's the thing, that we have a Babylon Tower here, and we don't understand what real work is. And I think that in my work, I lead to deep, everlasting changes, basically. And I can change people from one state to another. And that is not by me changing them, but by people having life skills to change themselves.
Yeah, practically what you do, you're helping to activate their own internal power, you know, and the energy.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Listen, I forgot to ask you, do you have actually by any chance a DVD that we can actually get about the exercises to improve the natural vision?
Definitely. A CD, a DVD is Yoga for Your Eyes.
Oh, that's what it is, Yoga for Your Eyes. Okay.
Right. By Sounds True, and it's in fact is so popular, it sold more than 50,000 for Sounds True throughout the year. And I hope it to put another zero there, you know.
But, listen, let me ask you a different question. How could, you know, for instance, you know, because I'm myself in health and wellness, how could I support you? What could I do, to promote your work more and, let people know, about this incredible work, what you do and the benefit?
Well, tell people about their incredible capacity. If you can send somebody to my August class, that's the best. But tell people about my incredible the incredible capacity they have. And have them read the book, Movement for Self-Healing. It's in Amazon and also in our school. And have them read the book, Vision for Life, which I'm already working on the second edition because it's sold healthy enough that we can do a second edition. So have them do all that. That will make a very big difference.
Listen, this Vision for Life, is this also a book?
It's a book. It's a book published by North Atlantic, carried by Random House Penguin, and it's actually being sold everywhere, including Europe. So now it's going to be a second edition to it. And so people can buy it right now and benefit a lot from the book. It talks about 10 steps that you take for natural vision improvement, which includes adjusting to different light frequencies, relaxing the eyes, looking at details. And I like to tell you a nice story about my best success that I had.
Absolutely.
It was a lady who had a terrible accident. She drove in Brazil. She came back from a vacation in a nice beach, and she drove in the middle of the night, and there was a truck that drove opposite from her without its lights on, and they collided. So her forehead broke, and they did a good surgery on that, but she lost basically 100% vision in her right eye and 97% vision in her left eye. And so when I met her, we did the exercise of sunning and palming and others, but then I patched her left eye, that was the seeing eye, and I put a page that reflected in the sun and took it away. She did not see the page, but she sensed that it's being taken away. So with time, she was trying to grab the page, and the more she saw, did it, and that's the issue of balanced use of the eyes. When she took the patch of the left eye, it saw 4%, then 5%. And after she saw 7%, she decided to come to San Francisco. And here we massaged her and worked with steams and with cold towels and warm towels. And when we finished the work here, she was able to go and see big signs. And when I met her again in Brazil, her vision was 20/30, 90% of 20/20 in her left eye. Now it's basically almost 20/20. And she told me, "Mayor, you gave me my life back." Because she's now doing dentistry again, and she's teaching dentistry. She's proud that none of her kids has any cavity, and that 6,000 of them in her town in Brazil. And even the other eye starts to see light and some shadows, the right eye. So that was probably the best case I ever had with vision. But I had other wonderful cases with vision, like a pharmacist that he was able to see 5% of normal vision, 2400, and it was very much cut. He couldn't correct it. He saw like double images all the time. And I asked him the question, "What did you do most of your adult life?" And he said, "I was looking at prescription, and I was looking at medicine bottles." And so I told him, "And this is a beautiful city. Look at the distance, 2 hours a day." And of course, we did the other exercises of palming, and sunning, and then I thought he was hunched back, so not enough blood comes to his head. And that was from the lifestyle he had. So I got him to move his head from side to side, and each time look at one arm and move the other arm towards the arm he's looking at. Well, guess what happened? His vision improved to 2100, 40% of normal vision, but it was correctable to 20/25. That's why I like glasses, that, you know, it's like you love it when a person can get out of the wheelchair and walk with a walker. Well, in this case, in spite of macular degeneration that got him to be totally uncorrectable with glasses, with my work, he ended up seeing 95%. In fact, he read to me many small articles about different medications because I wanted to know their effectiveness. And he went with me to a series of radio shows talking about the wonderful work we did with it.
Wow, that's just amazing. Listen, we have maybe just 2 or 3 minutes left over, so please, I mean, I'm so thrilled that we had such a great information from you. Help me to kind of finish. So what would your finishing thought would be to our listeners, you know, to give them on the way?
Well, my finishing thought is that, you know, I've written books and tapes, but the main thing is don't simply believe in yourself. Believe in yourself and always try to find a key to yourself. There's a famous author by the name of Thérèse Bertherat who wrote the book, The Body Has Its Reasons. And she said, your body is your house, you're the landlord, and a long time ago you lost the keys. So the idea is find your keys. Find how to work with your body in a new way. And that's what we're offering you. And that's why we want to see so many people in August. We want to see people working on themselves to advance themselves and to get way better. And I'm very grateful to every audience that listens to the show and listens carefully and understand that what they need to do is re-examine their body and have a new sense of how to use muscles they never used before. For example, walk backwards, walk sideways. Breathe in and out through your nose and exhale slower than you inhale and stand against the wall and put pressure on your lower back and then the middle back and then the upper back. Sense your back, sense different parts of your back and rest your eyes as much as you can. That will make a very big difference for you. So instead of wearing sunglasses, learn how to adapt to the sun. Instead of neglecting your eyes that always look from near, also look at the distance. Instead of only walking forwards, also walk backwards. So learn how to use more of you, and you're going to find that you're much happier.
Wow, beautifully said. Thank you so much, Mayor. Listen, I would really like to actually have this information for the August seminar, and I will put on my site too so people can actually, you know, get more information about. Listen, I just wanted to thank you, and that was pretty incredible. So, Maya, thank you so much for being on the show, and who knows, maybe for the future I will just kind of give you a jingle and bring you back. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Magdalena. Bye-bye.
You were welcome. Thank you so much. And good night, everybody. Have a great night. Until the next show. Good night. Bye-bye.